Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you have downloaded All Ball. All basketball, all the time. I know there's no NCAA tournament, so today is a Friday. We should be recapping all the games. I should be breaking down all the matchups. You should be following me on Twitter, and I should be winning you money. But I can't. Sorry. My bad. So here's what I want to do for as much time as I can do it, which is keep giving you pods of conversations with my basketball friends, their thoughts in the tournament, my memories in the tournament. We'll bounce around in years and things that we remember and all kinds of events. It really is as cool as you think it is. But the memories are unique and distinct. Like I remember, obviously, tons of memories as a kid going to NCAA tournament games, watching the Final Four in person, going to the practices. Heck, me and my buddies, we used to wait until the end of the weekend and we'd won, buy the t-shirts from the losing team in the semifinals, right? Like I remember Cincinnati lost in Minnesota. It was coached by Bob Huggins. You remember that team? Yeah, Nick Van Exel, sweet team. Well, if you waited till Championship Monday and they lost on a Saturday, you could get a Cincinnati Bearcat Final Four t-shirt for a couple of bucks. I used to sell tickets to the Final Four. My dad would give me one seat that he'd get from the NABC, maybe a second seat, flip those into a 100 seat, flip those to a 200 seat and get some money, to a 300 seat, get some money, to a 400 seat, get some money, get the worst seat in the house, and then split the money with my dad because it was his ticket originally, and then buy a ticket wherever and walk down and sit down low. Like that was my childhood. And then on Monday, if we were staying till Tuesday, we'd steal some of the banners. The Final Four in Minneapolis, the Final Four in Indianapolis. And yeah, I'm going to sell you out, Clay McKnight, you, me, some of my other buddies, Nick Marruzzos. That was more high school. I think I only did it a couple times. They would shimmy up light poles and risk death. I would simply someone was sitting outside of a bar and they were getting ready to cut it down. Like, hey, can I get that sign? Take it home with me. I don't even know where those signs are. And it wasn't like a rush. It was just kind of cool that somebody was going to throw out a sign that was signifying the Final Four we'd been to. And all we had was t-shirts from, or we'd also wait around the convention floor. And when the champion guys would be wrapping up shop, like, hey, can I get that Illinois jersey? Sure. We just hang out there all day. So not having the tournament, not having the Final Four, and this is a place I've taken my son twice to, won't get a chance. I'm bummed. So we'll include you on conversations and things that I've experienced. I'll give you one such experience. 1998 was my first tournament as a player. It was in Lexington, Kentucky. We played George Washington. Shante Rogers was their star point guard. They had a bunch of Russians. Mike Jarvis was their head coach. Played in Lexington. Obviously, Coach Sutton was not beloved in Lexington. But I do this thing with my brain. I don't have a photographic memory. Matter of fact, almost no one has a photographic memory. There's a lot of people who think they have photographic memory, one of which I think is probably listening to my podcast because he works in the same business. And I told him once, like, okay, what color shirt were they wearing and what color tie? He's like, I don't know. Like, dude, a photographic memory, you remember like it's a photograph. Anyway, but I have this thing where I close my eyes to see snapshots of my past. So we land in Lexington. We're an 8 seed taking on George Washington, a 9 seed. And we always had a police escort. I think everybody had a police escort, but I know we did because Coach Sutton was not well-liked in Lexington. A couple things. We went out to visit AP Indy. AP Indy is the champion racehorse that just died, but I think it's the most financially successful in the history of horse racing in terms of stud fees. So anyway, just passed away. I remember Coach Sutton like taking us around the farm. Said, we used to have Kentucky ball players work out at the farm. It was a good deal, but nothing's as good a deal as AP Indy, brother. Let me tell you, twice a day, every day, there's a reason that they call them a stud, right? And you're like, oh, wow. Anyway, we stayed at a Doubletree. Now, the way it works in the NCAA tournament is your hotel, both in proximity and quality, is based upon your seating within a region. Okay, so if you have the 8 seed, the 1 seed has the best hotel, all the way down. And in Lexington, the hotel, which is, I think, connected to the arena, was the one seat. That's where Duke was staying. We were staying at the Doubletree, which to most of you would seem like just a very average hotel. But when you're in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and your road games are in Lawrence, Kansas, and Ames, Iowa, and outside of Austin, nowhere particularly nice. Doubletree was sweet. We got cookies when we checked in. We had these big jet tubs, and there was a phone right next to the jet tub. And I remember just calling all my buddies, because this is before cell phones, calling all my friends in their rooms. We're like, what are you doing? I'm in my jet tub. What are you doing? I'm in my jet tub. Like, that was honestly the coolest part about that trip. Oh, that. And here's one additional memory. That first year we beat George Washington was the first game. It was like a noon Eastern time game in Indianapolis. No, in Lexington, Kentucky. Noon Eastern time we played. And the cool thing was we had nothing to do the rest of the day, right? Like, you're a college student. We're playing Duke, so we knew how to prepare for Duke. But I don't think Duke played right after us, or we didn't stay and watch Duke. They didn't play till the night. I don't remember exactly how it worked. But I just remember that we got done, and we didn't have anything to do the rest of the day. And there was like an Applebee's in our hotel. We had a team meal that night. So you get back to the hotel after media and everything. It's like 3:30. And you're just watching ball on TV. And I saw Bryce Drew hit the game winner against Ole Miss. Bunch of our guys on our team. There's some Arkansas dudes that were on that Ole Miss team. I don't know if Ansu Cisse was it Keith Carter? Ansu Cisse? Like, that was a good team. Good team. Anyway, I remember hitting and that shot. That game was actually in Oklahoma City. So I remember watching that game. Anyway. Fast forward to losing to Duke, and we'll talk a little bit about Duke with my brother who's going to join us, Greg Gottlieb. That Duke game was phenomenal. Me and Wojo kind of got into it. They had Chris Carwell. They had Chris Burgess, Battier, Brand. Those are all their freshmen. Rashawn McCloud was a beast, really hard for us. That was their first transfer, I believe, they took. Anyway, we lose to Duke, and we're flying back on the charter. Two or three things I remember. One, our team doctor, Oklahoma State people know who he is. I'm not going to sell Doc out. Anyway, I can't remember even what hurt. My back, my hamstring or something. Anyway, he was like, "Got only take one." And he like winks at me and gave me like five pills. It wasn't like Naperson. It was something that had a little kick to it. So we go to Applebee's after the game. We lose to Duke. And I knocked down two of those things in a beer. I don't remember how I got to my apartment. Right? Like, I have no recollection of the flight home at all, or of how I got home at all. 2 days later was St. Patrick's Day. And I'm sure beating Duke would have been better, but losing to Duke wasn't a terrible thing because we almost beat Duke. We were tied with 2.5 minutes to go. The place was going crazy. I'm sure everybody back home, and we had a bunch of sophomores starting. So we were like local celebrities. We skipped out of school, went to Green Eggs and Ham at Eskimo Joe's. We drank all day, and we were like conquering heroes, and we didn't win the fucking game. It was crazy. Honestly, nuts. So this tournament's a lot of fun. I never got to play in a Final Four, and one thing I've learned, this is the 20-year anniversary of our Elite Eight run. Did you know they don't have reunions for Elite Eight teams? No. Final Four team, you win one more game, like, let's have a reunion. Let's welcome them back to the basketball floor. Nobody does that for an Elite Eight team, and all they did was win one more game. But that is the way it works. There's a cruel, harsh reality to it. And honestly, it's okay. It's okay. People are going to win. People are going to lose. You're going to cry. You're going to feel bad at the time, but you get over it. Just like I think we'll get over not having a tournament. Let's get to my brother, Greg, and talk some tournament memories.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What's your first memory of the NCAA tournament? Your oldest memory? Not as a coach. Your oldest, like if you like close your eyes, what's your oldest memory?
That one's easy for me. My oldest memory to me is that sticks out is North Carolina State beating University of Houston on that last second. I guess you could call that an alley-oop, but that was an incredible play, and it always stands out in my mind. If I think of NCAA tournament, that one right away.
Okay. Do you remember where, like...
And then Jimmy V running around the court, just like he doesn't know who to hug, and he hugs everybody.
Yeah. Do you remember where you were? Like, I mean, in terms of the memory, that's the memory you do have. Do you actually remember where you were? Like, what was that, 83? So you were 13? No, you were 11. Any idea where you were?
I don't remember that. But, you know, you remember how many times we went to, what was that sports bar we used to go to? And we used to sit there all
Silky
day
and Sullivan's.
Drink Cherry Cokes.
Silky Sullivan's?
That place, right? I don't know if it was Sullivan's, but there was some sort of sports bar, burger place, or whatever it was. And we just
Silky Sullivan's was in Fountain Valley. It's still there. And we used that was one of the places we used to go. What was the place that Wendy worked at in Santa Monica? There
Spoons?
Was another one.
Did we go to Spoons?
Huh?
You talking about Spoons?
No. Wendy's our sister, by the way, if you're listening in. No, what was the sports bar that she worked at after college in Santa Monica?
I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to
text her. I remember my first memory was I remember the Georgetown Princeton game. Okay, so Georgetown Princeton, it was on ESPN, and we were working out at the Anaheim Hilton, or at least I was working out at the Anaheim Hilton, and it was on. And everybody stopped their workout and we're watching to see what happened. And obviously Georgetown finally won the game. That was like the first, like Princeton won, even though they didn't win the game. That's like my oldest
memory. That was an incredible game because it had everybody, no one thought they were going to compete with them. And they had Georgetown on the ropes.
Now keep in mind, for people who've listened to the pod with me and you, this is going back like a year ago. So, you know, player walk on Drake, no NCAA tournament. Then you go to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as an assistant. You guys just go in Division One, no tournament. Sac State, no tournament. You take over at San Diego State. First year you guys won, I'm going to say like six games. How many years in did you make it to the NCAA tournament?
Five. We won five games. Actually, I was at Sac State. We won one game my first year at Sac State. Then the next year we won three. And then I went to San Diego State. We won five. So I definitely hadn't experienced a whole lot of winning. And then in our third year, we probably had the most talented team in the league, but it took us a while to come together. But when we did, we were really good. We won seven out of our last eight. We lost to UNLV at UNLV on a step back three from Marcus Banks, who is a heck of a player, played in the NBA for a while. And we went to the tournament. And this is the crazy story about going to the tournament was the tournament was played, the Mountain West tournament was played in Vegas at Thomas and Mack. Uh-huh. And I think we were the four seed or something like that. We won our first two games, and we actually didn't have hotel rooms for the last night of the tournament because our school didn't think we were going to be there that long. And so we actually, some of us, the coaching staff, we had to move out of the hotel and stay next door. Because we didn't have rooms, and they had some other event coming in, which is really comical if you think about it. But
okay, wait. So this is Steve Fisher's third year, right? Third
year.
You guys had Randy Holcomb, who was a transfer from Fresno State. You had Tony Bland, who's a stud, Melee. Al Fox, who was he a walk on? Was he originally walk on? A walk on the whole time?
He was a recruited walk on. Yep.
Okay, and this is by his senior year. He averaged 17.
If anybody ever sees a picture of Al Fox, he always carried all his money in his sock, even during the games. So you look at any of the game photos, you can see there's a little wad of cash in his sock. But boy, he could get buckets.
Mike McHale, where was he a transfer from?
Mike McHale he was from Washington D.C., but he went to Porterville Junior College.
DeAndre Moore,
Smith too, who transferred from Michigan,
and DeAndre Moore is a transfer from Vanderbilt, right?
That's right. Yep.
And then you had Tuffy. Chris Walton was a sophomore on that team.
Yep.
You had eighth grade, who's Eric Sanders, whose nickname was eighth grade because right, when he visited campus, didn't the guys give you shit? And they said
when he was a freshman, and Randy Holcomb was a really talented kid, but he was a very strong personality, and he kind of intimidated everybody, you know. But Eric Eric was probably 6'9", 185 pounds or something like that. But he'd stick his nose in everywhere and anywhere. And so Randy used to get frustrated with him, and he told him, man, you look like you're in eighth grade. And it kind of just stuck. And to this day, his nickname is eighth grade.
Tommy Johnson.
Heck of a game. If you go back, if they ever play that game again, we jumped on Vegas. That was the third time. Like I said, we had lost on a step back three at their place only a week or two prior, and we jumped out on them. We were up 20, I think, and they made a run to come back. In a critical moment during that game, Randy Holcomb, who, as I said, he was our best player, but Randy had a hard time passing. He was one of those guys to talk about himself in third person, you know. Randy going to do what Randy going to do. Randy needs his FGAs. So, but in the critical moment, he penetrated and everybody collapsed on him, and he kicked the ball to Al Fox, who drained a jumper that kind of sealed the win. And it was kind of it wasn't just a game-sealing win. It just kind of signaled, like, again, how he figured it out, that he needed to trust his teammates. And so that was an incredible moment because, like you just said earlier, we won five games 2 years prior. We were 0-14 in the league in the Mountain West in our first year. Second year, we were 14-14, and then the next year, we go to the NCAA tournament. So that was an incredible, incredible turnaround, really.
Yeah, we played you guys that first year in Oklahoma City. We're up 40-14 at the half, and coach comes in and he sits up on this desk kind of table, and he looks right at me. You tell your brother they better get some players. They're gonna get fired. And I was like, don't worry, coach. Players, dudes are on the way. They're terrible. By the way, you'd lost in overtime to Vegas, so the step back three must have sent it to overtime because you lost 83-76 to overtime. About 2 weeks before, you also had beaten Wyoming by 1 point in the semis. Was that a buzzer shot? Do you remember how that game ended?
You know, I don't remember, but if I recall, Wyoming was the one seed. That's the crazy thing. You know, Wyoming struggled a little bit this year, but we played at Wyoming. I look back, and I believe 2001 and 2002, both, they won the league. So that was a heck of a win for us, really. Because we didn't,
okay, so
we
you
didn't
go, so
you know, we didn't beat the worst teams. We had to beat the best teams to go to.
Yeah,
the
they had no, they had Josh playing. Davis, Marcus Bailey, Dante Richardson, Jay Strait was a freshman, right, a little guard from Chicago.
Yeah,
they had a nice little squad. Okay, so you go to your first ever NCAA tournament. This is 2002, so you're 30 years old. Were you a full time assistant? You weren't still DOBO, right?
I was the operations guy, director of operations.
Okay, so it was your fault in the hotel room, weren't you?
I had nothing to do with that part. Nope, I wasn't in charge of travel. At that time, the travel was done, I believe, by our trainer. But it wasn't our trainer's fault. It was, like I said, it was the administration. I think when you go to the NCAA, even then, when you went to the conference tournament, it was kind of like your sports supervisor was in charge of it or something like that. But it wasn't me. So,
incredible.
And, you know, before you talk about the tournament, I think that this is one thing why everybody talks about wanting to show the brackets and stuff. But, you know, for every program that goes to the NCAA tournament, one of the highlights is getting your group of people together and just being able to see your name come up on the screen, your team. And it's a euphoric moment. And I remember that one as clear as day. I mean, that was an incredible moment for us and our program to be a part of.
It's interesting because
I remember
our first.
Ahead,
so hold on. Well, let me share mine. So in '98, okay, I played at Notre Dame. We were 14-17. We were terrible. Transferred, sat out, and then had to watch all these games in '97. Right, so '96. We all go to the Final Four in New York, and we sold our tickets. Right, and we watched it in Jim Ornstein's was
sports
the dad
bar.
Sports
yeah.
bar. Right, we watched the Final Four, which was Syracuse, who 3 weeks before, when I was at Notre Dame, we 4 weeks before on senior night, we're up 15 at the half, up 6 with the ball with a minute to go in Syracuse and choked the game away. And then we led most of the first half at the Garden, the first round of the Big East tournament, and choked the game away. Anyway, like Syracuse is like the fourth best team in the Big East. They play for national championship. That's 96. 97, I'm sitting out. And among my visits, I visited Oregon. Jerry Green was the coach. Mark Turgeon, Darren Kalish, and Tad Boyle. Those are the assistant coaches at Oregon. I visited Oregon, and it was awesome. Kyle Milling, whose son now obviously plays in Nevada. Kyle Milling, who played for Dad and played at Santa Barbara, transferred to Oregon. He was my host. So I go up there. I go to Oklahoma State. I'm supposed to go on Tuesday and stay all day Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday morning fly out, go to Oregon, and Thursday night there's the Oregon Arizona game. So on a Tuesday, I fly in out of Orange County like 7 a.m. My flight's delayed. Doesn't take off until like 4 in the afternoon instead of 7 in the morning. I don't get there until late at night. It's like snowy, cold. Oklahoma State's not very good. They beat Texas A&M. I drink beers with Adrian Peterson. It was more about basketball than the visit. I go to Oregon, and Oregon beats Arizona, and Miles Simon, as you know, my oldest friend in basketball, my best friend in basketball, he's on that team, and like he was actually warming up, and I'm sitting, and at the old MacArthur Court, if you're sitting, I was literally sitting in the second row of the bleachers, the players were in the first row of the bleachers, and he's like warming up, and he daps me up. I was like, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm on a visit. He's like, no way. Anyway, Jerry Green and Oregon beat Arizona. They party like rock stars that night. We go to the Final Four in Indy, and I watch my best friend win the national championship, right? So it's like salt to the wound. 98, we're the 2 seed in the Big 12. We get upset in the first Big 12 tournament game against Texas. It's Tom Pender's last win as a Texas head coach. And they had always played fast and frenetic, and they played super slow and held the ball. And, I mean, 5 or 6 crazy things go wrong. Brady Perriman hits a shot and beats us. And so we go from like what should have been like a 4 seed, maybe 5 seed, to like an 8 seed overnight. So I remember when the brackets came out the first time, we're in our old locker room, which is the dungeon, a shithole. And pops up Oklahoma State, we're playing George Washington, Shante Rogers, and then a bunch of Russian dudes. Mike Jarvis was the coach. And then the 1 seed was Duke. And it was like the air was kind of let out of the room. Like, we were excited to be in, but like, damn, we're an 8 seed and we finished 2nd in the Big 12? Like, no way. And then Duke was sitting there looming. It wasn't that much celebration, even though they hadn't been to the tournament the 2 years before I got there. Your first NCAA selection was, do you remember where it was, with San Diego State, where you guys were sitting?
We had a big room in the athletic department that they... There's a big area where they did all their, you know, team functions, or anytime we had a big athletic department meeting, had a giant big screen that came down, and that they were able to kind of play it. And what was really cool that we did it there at San Diego State, but was everybody also, and all of our families were there, and so, you know, the coaches' wives, their kids, everybody was there. So we had, you know, probably 100 people, it seemed like, in the room. And it was an incredible moment, really. I mean, but it was just everybody wins that day, right? For the most part, everybody wins that day. Obviously, I remember the anticipation, and, you know, you're just trying to figure out, okay, well, where are we going to match up, da 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 da. But in that moment right there for us at San Diego State, remember, we wouldn't have went to the NCAA tournament had we not won the conference tournament. So we probably weren't going to get a good seed regardless. So we just were happy to be in it. And then, of course, it came up that we played University of Illinois in Chicago, which is a really good neutral site game for the NCAA tournament.
He has a 13 seed too, which is, you know, like that's just barely in the field. You know,
no, I mean, question. It was a 13-4, right? Is that what it was?
They have Frank Williams, Brian Cook, Luther Head, and they hit 21 of 33 threes on you. 21 of 33. What the hell were you guys doing?
You know, That's a great question. One of the things that was a staple of Steve Fisher's early in his career and something that he adjusted to later at San Diego State was he was committed to doubling in the post, and we thought their guys were really, you know, like you talked about Brian Cook. They had a couple big kids that we thought we had to double in the post, but they set a career for threes. We kept doubling. They'd organize and kick out, and boom, and they shot the crap out of it. Obviously, boy, that game was over almost before it started in that scenario.
Let me correct myself. It was 13 of 25 from three. My mistake. 52%. 21 of 33 from the field.
Still, 13 threes is a lot in any game. I mean,
Frank Williams hit five, and Lutherhead hit three, and Corey Bradford hit three. So they're starting backcourt. They brought in, you know, Lucas Johnson hit one. Kind of left the wrong guys, but anyway, the starting backcourt.
I think he had a really low percentage going into that game. Hadn't made a whole lot of threes either. He ended up, obviously, he was a really good shooter, but he hadn't proven that at that point. And he was a freshman, I believe. And
yes, he had shot that year. He shot 29% from three, and only made like 17 during the regular season. Actually, 29% after counting that game. So he probably was in the mid-20s.
You know, if you go back and look too, there was a heck of a game that came before ours. I remember we were part of that too. You know, when you haven't been to the tournament too, is, you know, all the other things that come with it. You can get sidetracked, you know, and then the nerves as well of playing in your first game. I'm talking about the players just as well more than the coaches, but sometimes both. And I remember we had to wait a little bit longer, too. You're waiting because I believe Creighton upset Florida in the game before, and I want to say it was an overtime game.
Double overtime.
Yeah.
Double overtime. I remember watching that game in studio, and I believe, I'm trying to think, Kyle Korver did not hit the big shot. It was Terrell Taylor had like a career game. He had 28 points. He hit a three to win the game.
And I just remember watching Florida coming off the court dejected, you know, and your team's waiting in the hallways to come out, and they're walking back, and you're like looking, oh my God, this is, you know, wow, Florida, as good as Florida is, and they're done, and you know, you're just not used to it. But I think the more when you start looking at the tournament, people don't realize this maybe from the outside looking in, but there's no bad teams in the NCAA tournament, you know, they're all and the teams that are, even the teams that are in because they got in from winning the conference tournament, they're playing well right now. So despite the seeding, there isn't, like, when you start preparing for your opponent, there's nobody that you're going to say, oh, well, we're going to beat these guys.
I remember the first NCAA tournament game I called was Wichita State against Pitt. And this is going to 2013, right? This is not, obviously we've covered a ton and I want to get back to all your games, but like, this is the perfect example, right? So 2013, I'm getting ready to call the NCAA tournament, and it's Pitt, who I had seen a bunch, and they have Steven Adams, right? And I'm like, and he was only a freshman, and they're taking on a team in Wichita State who I had seen win their, they hadn't won their conference tournament. So I was trying to figure out how good they were. And, you know, you start talking to coaches and it turns out it's Greg Marshall. And Greg Marshall, I had gotten to know when I was at ESPN, he kept winning league championships at Winthrop and he at one point in time, he took the College of Charleston job, changed his mind, went back home. Right. He couldn't get out of there, so he kind of befriended a couple other people in the media, and so I got to know him. Anyway, so when you don't know who you're going to get until the Sunday right after the selection show. Back then, I was living in Orange County, working in New York City. I'd go get on a plane, and right before you get on the plane, they'd send you a text. You're in the Salt Lake region. Like, all right. So you start researching, like, oh, okay, I've seen Wichita play. But I had no idea, like zero idea about Wichita outside of I knew they had Malcolm Armstead, who was a transfer. I didn't know anything. They had Carl Hall, who had had a heart problem, probably shouldn't even been playing, right? So I watch a bunch of film, and they're getting ready to take on Pitt. And I realized that, you know, Ron Baker had been hurt most of the year. This Carl Hall had been out with a heart problem. Like, they're a lot better than their record. And then I watch Pitt, and you watch Pitt practice. You only get an hour to watch them practice. But you just kind of tell in their mojo, they're like, they're just not, like, connected, you know? Not connected at all. And you talk to Jamie about any team he's ever had. And, you know, he has this way of painting a picture of they're really good, but something's amiss. Anyway, they had Trayvon Woodall, who was a senior. I'm like, well, they got a senior point guard. Lamar Patterson was their best player. So early in the game, Lamar Patterson picked up, I think, two fouls. And then he actually, they're winning, and he gets called for. Do you remember when the flagrant one, flagrant two, this is the first year it went in. And initially, there was no, like, asterisk basketball move. If you hit somebody with your elbow, you were getting a flagrant foul, regardless. He goes and gets an and one, lays the basketball in with his right hand. But as he went in, his left elbow went back and hit a kid in the face. Again, just a basketball move. He gets a flagrant foul, flagrant one. That's his third personal foul. So they wipe the basket off. That's 2 points. They make the two flagrant shots. That's 2 points. The four-point turnaround. And the best player for Pitt ends up sitting out, right? The game became a laugher after that. Like, Wichita kicked the shit out of him. Trayvon Woodall was like 1-for-12. It's a terrible game. You know, again, Steven Adams was a monster, but they almost never threw him the ball. And that was like one of the things you could see, like, in practice when they talk about it. Like, they all kind of thought he was a goof and he's too young. Meanwhile, like, here I am falling in love with Klee Anthony Early. Who's, you know, who dominated, and Malcolm Armstead, and I'm like, dude, and Ron Baker didn't even play well, and they win by 15 going away. Was there a play, maybe not that game, was there, because I still think, maybe I'm crazy, like the very next game when Wichita beat Gonzaga, people forget that Gary Bell got hurt in that game, barely played.
Sure.
And Gonzaga was the one seed and almost lost to Southern. Southern was tied. This is the second game I've called in the NCAA tournament. It's me and Spiro Dittus, and we're in Salt Lake City. And the Southern band is awesome. Like, they sound different. They feel, they take over the whole arena. We're like, man, who gives a shit if they can play? Southern band is awesome. And the coach is cool. And anyway, they're like leading with 4 minutes and change to go. And Spiro and I are like, oh my God, we're going to call the first 16-1 upset ever. We can't, we're freaking out. And Gonzaga survives. Well, Gary Bell got hurt at the start of the next game, and Wichita ends up beating them. They hit a bunch of threes, and they beat them. Was there, can you think of a moment in it? Because you only won one. How many NCAA tournament games you played in?
I'm going to say five, just off the top of my head. But that, I might be wrong, maybe six. But the only one we won was beating Louisville in, I guess that's 2009. We beat Louisville by 20. Which was a heck of a win.
But like the Indiana game, when you were at San Diego State, what year did you play in Indiana?
That would have been 2006. And we were up 10 in the second half with what we thought was full control of the game.
Was there a play where it got away from you?
Well, we were up one with under a minute to go. And it may have been less, you know, under 30 seconds, I can't remember off the top of my head, but all we had to do was get one stop. Their shot clock was kind of running down, and they threw a skip pass from the kind of wing to the top, and arguably our best player, Marcus Slaughter, deflected the pass, and he thought he deflected it towards our basket, and the ball kind of just had a weird spin and went straight up in the air and kind of went behind him and ended up going right back to really their best shooter. He turned around and banged a three. And
Robert
really,
Vaden?
Marcus is six. Yeah, Vaden. If Marcus just lets the ball go through and doesn't go for the steal and it arrives on the catch, Robert Vaden doesn't get the shot off. And we win the game. But you know, that was a critical moment, and those are the kind of moments you never forget, too, right?
So no, not at all. You don't forget. Like, I remember, and I know we're bouncing back in time for people, in 98, our second game, we played Duke, and it's a hard, hard-fought game. Me and Wojo got into it, right? They have Burgess, Brandon, and Battier, they're freshmen. They were a good Duke team. We were much better than our seeding. And we had older for a team that was picked last in the Big 12. I mean, it was a joke that people didn't understand. We had Destin Mason, who obviously was a 10-year pro, and we had Brett Robisch, who was a fifth-year senior, transferred from Illinois. His dad was a pro, and he played a long time overseas. He's a stud. You know, we had Adrian Peterson, who was probably the second to Paul Pierce, the second best wing in the Big 12 that year. Me, Joe Atkins, we had a really good team. We're tied with 2.5 minutes to go in Lexington. And I'm coming up the court, and everybody's on their feet. And Coach Sutton didn't really call plays. Like, Sean would call the plays. And he's doing something with his arms, like taking them in and making them out, almost like flapping wings. And he's yelling, I can't hear him. I can't hear what he's saying. And my second NCAA tournament game, I'm a little scared of the dude, maybe a little tight. So I just call a 20-second timeout. Hey, Coach, I know what you're calling. I can't hear. Can't hear you. And I had, and honestly, I had been on them all year. Like, can't we have, because one of the things that John McLeod had, and her name was, he would have a hand signal for every play, for everything you did. And he would do this weird shit where he'd like cover it up with his jacket, like somebody from the stands is watching. He'd like open up his jacket pocket and put a two out there. It was almost like a baseball catcher. Start whistling. And he give you the sign for the
ball. He want to make sure that when you're watching on film, you can't pick up the sign.
No, I understand. I understand. He'd X down, one of my favorite plays. He would like do a no looker and cross his index and middle finger and look the other way and whistle. Anyway, so I was on Coach and Sean like, hey, can we have like, just tell me what you like. Otherwise, I'm going to run what I want to run. And like, no. We want you to do what we want you to do. Like, okay, give me a hand signal because it's loud. It's loud. And I never got a hand signal. Anyway, so I call a timeout, and Coach is like, I was just telling you to spread out, and you call our last timeout. I was like, sorry. Shit, man. I couldn't hear you. My bad. Anyway, we come out of the timeout, and we run Cowboy Fade. Now, Michigan State runs the same play. Cowboy series is, it's the old kind of 2-1-2, hit the guy in the middle, the two guards cut, the wings, we put the bigs out wide, and they go dual pin downs. Michigan State runs it, they always cross those guys. But the fade, which is like a double flare, right, where the guards cut like they're cutting hard towards the basket, and the big guys set dueling flare screens. And a lot of times you get the slip, or if they chase over the top, you'll get a lob. So they chased over the top on Adrian Peterson, and I throw it, and he catches it, and he's going towards the basket. And I don't know if Rashawn McLeod was closing or Battier was closing. I can't remember. But shit, he did not. He should have just gone up and dunked it, you know, or tried to draw contact. And he kind of tried to shoot a floater and he missed it. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, that was our moment. Tie game. We'd fought back, playing against Duke. And he kind of shot a floater. They come down, they throw it into Rashawn McLeod, and we were post-doubling. He just went too quick. He was too good a post player for Desmond Mason to guard. We come down, we run another play for Pete, and it was kind of the same thing. We called a Russian, which is just, it's like an old inside triangle. And, you know, like I catch on a wing, we put Atkins in the strong side corner, so there's no weak side help. Peterson's the strong side block. He screens away and then comes off a pin down. And, you know, he's 17 feet in, curling off a pin down. He's fucking money. And it goes in and out, right? So, like, you remember those individual plays more so than anything else on how you lost a game. All right. So let's go to, how was Monty, who had had a ton of tournament experience, and Fisher, who had a ton of tournament experience? What were they like in getting ready for these games?
I think they both had, like you said, tremendous amount of experience. I mean, no one has a better NCAA tournament story than Steve Fisher, right? You go from being the assistant who gets named the interim head coach, and then you win six and win the national title. I mean, that's an incredible story. I don't know if you can't write that. If you did, you wouldn't believe it, and it'll never probably happen again. But so that was pretty amazing stories. But I think in for him, the thing that he was so good was trying to keep everybody level-headed and be prepared. I think the thing with Mike was just an incredible preparation guy in terms of really doing a thorough job. And he was probably more creative defensively, where Steve Fisher is more creative offensively. Our first NCAA tournament that we went to with Mike Montgomery, we lost to Maryland. But the second year, we played Louisville, and they had a really good low post guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they were really, really good low post guy. And we decided not only to double him, but we had our four man guard him, and then we doubled with our center. And we had a 7'3" kid from China, Max Zhang. And that really won the game for us. We just eliminated them, and they weren't prepared for the double because we had doubled all year. And we ended up beating Louisville by 20. And really, that was all Mike right there. That was incredible in terms of preparation. But just like you said, I think one of the things people don't realize, a big part of winning in the tournament is your seed. You know, and we had the same problem you guys had, was we won the conference that year, first time in 50 years at Cal, but the conference reputation wasn't very strong, and so we got an 8 seed. I think we were either 8 or 9. We played Louisville, and then we beat them, and then we had to play Duke, who was the 1 seed, and they might have been the number 1 overall seed, but they ended up winning the national title, so everybody lost to them. And as you know, when you play against Duke in the NCAA tournament, too, that as much of a reputation as Mike Montgomery had, it's hard to trump Mike Krzyzewski. And, you know, I think we were like 3 minutes into the game, and one of our best players, Patrick Christopher, got fouled so hard, which they didn't call it, but he got knocked out so hard that he had to go to the locker room with stitches, and there was no foul. So, you know, that was an interesting game in itself.
I remember what you told me about that Duke team, and it's funny. People to this day, you know, Dukies to this day, early in the season that year, I don't know if you remember, Duke played in the, I think it was the preseason NIT. And I was on at halftime with Jay Williams, and Arizona State was cutting them up. Now, they end up coming back to win the game, but Arizona State was cutting them up. And they were running Princeton, right? And I said, man, Duke looks alarmingly unathletic. Now, it was more of a discussion about Mason Plumlee, who was a freshman, and the athleticism he brought to the table. And it's interesting to me because what's lost in that discussion is about midseason for that Duke team, I think they lost to Georgetown, like, in January. And they completely changed their style of defense. They went to more pack line, and they also started playing Brian Zubek, who became the best rebounder in college basketball. And so there are two things. One, something you told me about Kyle Singler. You're like, man, I don't know how good Duke is, but Kyle Singler is one tough SOB. Your line, which was a good one, which was, when your best player is your toughest player, you're going to have yourself a hell of a team. And that was Duke. But
I think that was one of those things for me that year. I remember that Kyle Singler was one of those guys that was kind of a darling with the media in general. Everybody talked about Kyle Singler. So, you know, when you're not paying attention, you're like, well, you know, he just gets all that attention because he's a Duke, et cetera, et cetera. But then when you start preparing for him, he earned a tremendous amount of respect and admiration by the way he played. I mean, he was tough. They'd post him up. He'd come off screens. Everybody's trying to face guard him and keep him from getting the ball, and he just would not allow that. I love the way he played. He had tremendous moxie. But like you said, Zubek really was a huge factor, especially in the NCAA tournament. He developed into a low post score. Duke doesn't really traditionally throw the ball to their post that much. They were going to him hard in the NCAA tournament, and what he was doing a great job of was getting the ball deep. And the other thing they did a phenomenal job on with that team was on any of their offensive rebounds, they couldn't get the ball. If they weren't facing the basket, they did a great job out for threes.
Yeah, and they got that idea was, I mean, they had kind of done that some, but that was the Davidson thing. Like, Davidson, They, remember when they went to the Elite Eight, they called them daggers, and they practiced it every day in practice, which was you get an offensive rebound, you kick out, because it's just you nobody tracks shooters. And that was one of those. They were, if you look statistically, that Duke team was the best offensive rebounding team in the country. Zubek was a great offensive rebounder. Even when they beat Butler in the national championship, they only hit five threes, but Zubek had six offensive boards in that game. But that was their thing. They changed the way they played, because Duke had always climbed into you defensively, super hard hedge, up in the passing lanes. And that team, you had John Shire, he wasn't doing that. Kyle Singler, he wasn't doing that. Lance Thomas was like an Energizer bunny, but he was a big. You know, Zubek, so they actually were not a crazy athletic team in terms of the ranginess of other Duke teams, but they found a way to figure it out and played to their strengths.
You know what, too, I think, and you're right, I think the other thing that people don't recognize as well from the outside looking in, again, we were an 8 seed. We went to the tournament the year before. We lost in the first round to Maryland. But we didn't have the experience of being in the tournament like Duke had. And so, again, you know, we beat Louisville by 20. That was a phenomenal moment for our program at that time. Whereas if you're Duke and you win your first round game, all right, now let's go get ready for the second game. And so, and I'm talking about just everybody, your coaches, your players, all those guys, you know, you now have to get refocused. It's an incredible thing. The further you go, to still be playing, and other people are going home or done, and then the magnitude of all the media coverage around each game only grows. And so, you know, that day in between, making sure again, you got to now get your guys. You got 48 hours to prepare for an opponent that you've never seen before. And really, now all of a sudden, it's, you know. You know, it's different. Like when you're playing in your league, you know so much about your other team. You know how to prepare some of the main things that you do. You're not able to do now. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you're almost playing people straight up. In that you got a chance maybe with a short prep to take away one or two things, but you're not even going to know what everybody, you know, what they really are trying to do. And so that makes it really hard to prepare for. But again, the experience factor for a team who's been there and expects to win really is important. So that's what makes it even more amazing for a team like Wichita State, like you said, to win those first couple games, the first time they did it.
Yeah. And then they got, it was LaSalle, I think, in the Sweet 16, and then they played Ohio State and went to the Final Four. That was a great basketball game. Turned out, and then what's interesting,
again,
like Greg Marshall,
you just said it. Like, I mean, how many people? But we beat LaSalle to go to the Elite Eight. I mean, like, you know, yeah. So everyone kind of needs.
That happened to us.
For those upsets to happen, you have to. There has to be a couple of those, right? Where you?
No, listen, we had
you guys.
Yeah, my senior year, so we played Hofstra, Speedy Claxton. I got in a foul trouble. I barely played. It was, you know, they were he got superstar whistle or whatever. We smacked them, Jay Wright's team, by like 40. And then we played Pepperdine, because Pepperdine, that was Bob Knight's last game in Indiana. Pepperdine smacked Indiana, smacked them. And I remember you talk about a team walking dejected off the floor. I remember we beat Hofstra, and we did the press thing or whatever. And then we were in the hallway, and I knew some of those Pepperdine guys, and they're getting ready to go out. And they just had this look in their eye like, we're going to kick the shit out of them. And they did. I mean, it was like it was a no doubter. But so we played Pepperdine, and you know, they played fast and ran like a 1-3-1 zone. We just carved them up, and so we didn't really. The first two games weren't really that great. And then when we played Seton Hall, Shaheen Holloway got hurt in the second round against, I think it was, they beat Temple, who Temple was the 2 seed. We were the 3 seed. Right, so they upset Temple. So we got Seton Hall, and we got Seton Hall without their best player. And Ty Shine had played great against Temple because they had no scouting report on him, but we had like a week to prepare for him. So, and we led tip to finish. We won by one, but it was a 3 that went in the buzzer or whatever. This is what's interesting about having, you talk about a veteran team. I tweeted this out today. We're playing the Sweet 16, and we're playing Seton Hall, and they were switching between man-to-man and playing 2 in the paint. Literally playing like instead of a diamond one or a triangle and 2, they were not guarding me and one other guy, and we're at the free throw line, and I was like, hey, let's run Cyclone, And Cyclone was just ball screen on one side, double back screen, the big guy rolling. And then you kind of flip those screens, and the last screener is the shooter, and he comes out kind of the weak side, and I can throw a skip pass to him. We had not run the play the entire season. So even if they had scouted it leading up to the Sweet 16, it was not in our bag. It was from the year before. And we'd run it to death. We stole it from Iowa State. We ran it my sophomore year, my junior year. But, like, this is what a veteran team can do. We're like, hey, we're going to run Cyclone. Coach is like, okay. And we got, like, three layups off it. We ran the same inbounds play against them that we, again, we hadn't run all year, but we had run a couple years before. And that was where we got almost all of our points. We nearly choked the thing away, our good free throw shooters missing free throws. But still, that's the kind of the ability with a veteran team. And my senior year, we had four fifth years. Holy shit, we had an old-ass team. Me, Glenn Alexander, Brian Montanati, am I forgetting somebody else? Us three, that's 3 fifth years. And then we had Joe Adkins, a fourth-year senior, Desmond Mason, a fourth-year senior, somebody, Alex Weber, a fourth-year senior, and then one sophomore, Fred Yonsine. We had an old-ass team, and we got the benefit. And then we were supposed to play Duke with Jay Williams as a freshman, I think, and they got upset by Florida, and we're like, but here's the crazy part. One of Florida's assistants had come to our practices mid-year because he had played for Coach Sutton. And what's the guy's name? He was the head coach at Arkansas. Why am I spacing on his name? He played at Kentucky. Shit.
Yeah, you're talking about Sean's best friend.
Yes. He'd come to practice. Came to practice. And look, I think Coach Sutton's a great coach, but he kind of overthought it, where we spent the day before working on like press breaks, and we took off our secondary break, which is what we scored on all of our stuff on. And I was like, Coach, give me the ball. I'll break your press. You don't, like, you're wasting your time. And we got so kind of discombobulated early. They were really talented. We got down, I think, 13, came back, tied the game, and then they boat raced us. And that was my last college game. So it goes fast. All right, last thing, because we got to wrap. No NCAA tournament this year for you. Obviously, coached in one at Oregon State, coached in a couple at Cal, coached in a couple at San Diego State. Give me your favorite NCAA tournament as a coach memory. Is it the win over Louisville? Or something off the court? Go.
Well, first, I'm going to give you my worst, and then I'm going to give you my favorite. Sorry, I'm jumping in here because I think this is important for me. But 1 year, we lost our last two games at Cal where we would have won the league. We finished second. And if you recall, the first-place team, Washington, didn't go to the NCAA tournament, which is unheard of, right? Pac-12 champion doesn't go to the tournament. And Colorado won the league, so they got a bid. And we go and meet, and like we were talking about, the normal euphoria where everybody's in the room, they call your name. And I just always remember this as clear as day, but we're all sitting there in our room with our whole team, and everybody's getting ready, hoping our names should be called. We should have been an at-large. And they announced our team name in the play-in game. And we were playing South Florida in the playing game, and you could have heard a pin drop. And I'll tell you what, that was the precursor to knowing our guys were not excited about being in that game. And, you know, people always talk about the playing game, those games in Dayton, which, by the way, are incredible once we got there. I mean, it was incredible. Dayton does a phenomenal job, but that the first four thing, a lot of it is determined by your guys' mentality, similar to when people go to the NIT. And I mean, we just got boat raced by South Florida, which was a good team. And I believe they went, I'm not sure they go to the Sweet 16 or they lose in the round of 32, but they won more than one game. But they were ready to play. They took it to us. And boy, that was a miserable experience and disappointing, I guess, probably more than anything. But I just remember you could have heard a pin drop in that one. If I were to flip that around, definitely I'd have to say beating Louisville by 20. I mean, you know, you're talking about not just winning a tournament game, but beating a program with history like Louisville, beating a team that was coached by Rick Pitino, you know, and then beating them soundly in the way we did it. That was definitely an incredible moment for us. So that, and then probably really at Oregon State, I think that would, I'd have to put that right up there. And I'll tell you, the thing that was different with Oregon State was, you know, we had us, I think Northwestern was the only program that hadn't gone to the tournament at that point, and we had the longest drought after Northwestern of 25 years of not going to the NCAA tournament. And so for us in year two to go to the NCAA tournament, it was incredible around here in Corvallis and what we did. And what, the thing that was really cool, I felt like it was, that was, that we represented all the coaches and players that came before us for the last 25 years when we got ourselves into the NCAA tournament. That's the amount of pride that we had as a group and what we felt like we were playing for. And we lost to VCU in a close game. We just couldn't get over the hump. But boy, the amount of pride we had for just even getting there was incredible.
Awesome stuff. Thanks so much for joining me.
You got it.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, that's it for this edition of All Ball. We'll have more. We'll have more. Don't forget to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on your iHeartRadio app, Fox Sports Radio. Or if you're streaming or working at home now, foxsportsradio.com. You can check me every day. There's also a podcast version of it. And within that podcast version of it, I got a great interview with Bill Self you're going to love. We don't repurpose that on the All Ball podcast. I think there's some legalities with it or whatever. Anyway, download that. It's really, really good. In the meantime, sorry you're missing hoops. Thank you so much for downloading. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.